Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. My name is Kate Prusser and I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. And today on the show, I will be joined by the usual, my co-host, John Troopin. And we also have a special guest, right-handed pitcher Art Warren, prospect in the Seattle Mariners organization. So we just kind of started talking and I hit record because he was just kind of freestyling a little bit in the pre-show conversation. So let's get right to it. It's a really entertaining hour, and I think that you will learn a lot.
Too broke to pay attention. Man.
Yeah.
Man, listen. All I got is this ambition.
That's it.
A couple million make you stand different.
Hey.
They dropped the ball and so I ran with it. I'm like, man, listen.
So I start off by working out with them at 6 in the morning and then go through my workout in the weight room, and then I come home and sleep and then get up and pretty much just hang around all day. But it feels like I've kind of been on the road a lot ever since I got done with the season. My girlfriend lives where I went to school, pretty much over in the Ashland area. So I'll go back there and visit her and her family. And then when she's at work, I'll go work out at Ashland at their facilities and hang out with my pitching coach and head coach. And then when I'm not doing that, I feel like I'm with my friends. And I was just over in Indiana. I just saw Mitch and Woody over there for the – they were at the coaches' convention. Our head coach was getting inducted to the ABCA Hall of Fame. So me and about 20 other players went over there and supported him for that. And so it was really cool. So I feel like I just been kind of all over the place, really.
Well, I mean, even from last year, right? Like, because you had the full season, you spring training, right, on the minor league side.
Right.
You weren't in big league camp last year, right?
Right.
So you had spring training on the minor league side. Then you go to, you have a full year in Modesto. Then you have the playoffs there. So that extends. Then you go to the AFL. Then you have the playoffs there, right?
It was a long year, that's for sure.
A long year, but a good year, and certainly a big step forward for you.
It's a huge step. It was awesome. Feels like a blessing, honestly. I mean, just looking back on it, I remember telling, you know, like when Festa and Deeks would all go to the field, and I remember telling them, like, it's not going to hit me that we won our Cali championship until, like, I'm sitting on the couch at home sometime next month. And at this time, it would have been December. And I'm like, it's not going to hit me until I'm sitting there and be like, holy cow, we just won a Cali championship. And then little did I know that we would go on and win the Arizona Fall League championship as well. So it still hasn't really hit me yet that we've won two championships.
Yeah, you're going to have to get an extra hand for all them rings.
Yeah, exactly. That's the goal. Just keep piling them on.
Until you cannot move, until you have to have like a little cart to put your hands on to wheel around under the weight of all of your rings.
You know, I think it's funny. When Jerod Dyson showed up last year, I think it was during maybe the Mariners Fan Fest. He was on the stage and he was telling them, he coined this term, everywhere I go, the champagne flow. And so me and Darren, we loved that because at that time we were in Bakersfield and we had just clinched in the playoffs in Bakersfield, and we clinched in Kane County with the Lumber Kings. So Darren and I had both just been on two playoff teams our first year, and we were like, we were wanting to coin that term as well. So we thought that was pretty cool. But then, it carries over again to this year, and we go and we're in the playoffs again, and, you know, we win the Arizona Fall League. So I'm kind of thinking maybe I should coin that term, everywhere I go, the champagne flow. Maybe Jerry will be like, hey, this guy's a winner. Let's put him up in the big leagues.
Tell us a little bit about your background. So you went to Ashland, which is a D2 school, right?
Yep.
Were you playing in championships there? Is that So does the champagne flow stretch back to when it was apple cider flow?
Well, we were conference champions, so that was cool. So, yeah, I guess you could say that. but we went to regionals, and we unfortunately lost, so we didn't make it to the Division II College World Series. But we did win a conference championship. So yeah, I mean, winning does stretch back to that. I would say it doesn't go back any further than that, though, because I was beat in high school to go to state. And then at Cincinnati, we were like maybe, I don't even know, like maybe 15 and whatever over the course of the 2 years that I was there. We just, we didn't win a lot. And so I started a winning trend when I transferred to Ashland.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about just sort of how you came to baseball and why you chose Ashland and everything.
So obviously, you know, I started baseball at a younger age, and I was always into like football as well. So
yeah, because you're huge, right? Right. You are an enormous person. What do you go, 6'3",
I'm like
6'4"?
6'3", and I was up to 246 in the fall league.
Okay, nice. So you look like a linebacker.
You're a linebacker, right?
Right. Okay.
So I was always into football and baseball growing up, and when I got to high school, it was still kind of, you know, split. And then right around my sophomore year, junior year, I started working out with Coach Held, Tom Held's from Defiance over here in our area, and he's the head coach of John Neese, who pitched with the Mets and the Pirates for a little bit. He's the head coach of Chad Billingsley, who's notorious for being with the Dodgers. so he has, you know, the likes of those guys. And so I started working out with him, and he got me, you know, to where I needed to be. And I was able to get a scholarship at Cincinnati. And so I think that's really when my drive for baseball kind of took off. I'd always favored baseball a little bit more than football, but I was really into football as well. You know, I enjoyed playing that. But I wouldn't say it was until maybe my junior year of high school when I kind of started to realize that I could play at the next level. And so that's when I, you know, kind of shifted to just baseball really only. And I didn't play football my senior year. I played for the St. Louis Cardinals scout team. So that was kind of when it really took off.
And did you always prefer pitching, or did you have dreams of professional hitting as well?
You know, I was committed to go to Cincinnati to do both, and that didn't work out. When I transferred to Ashland, I was going to do both there, but I tore my UCL, so I decided it would just be better just to pitch only. But I did have aspirations to do both. I loved hitting. Some people in our area always said that they thought me being a hitter would be my ticket to the next level as opposed to pitching. So you kind of always just wonder, you know, what would have happened if I would have hit. But then I go out in there and I see, you know, my teammates throwing 96-mile-an-hour T-seams, and I'm like, you know, it was easier to hit back in high school. I don't think I could hit that now.
For sure.
So coming into baseball then, did you expect to get drafted? When did the Mariners take you? Take us through your draft day a little bit.
Okay, I'll answer that first part first. If I expected to get drafted, I did not expect to get drafted at all, really, because just the way my college career went, for me, not pitching very much, not pitching well at Cincinnati, and then transferring to Ashland, you know, going down to D2, not having very many innings logged in my college career, which means scouts didn't have really a good chance to see me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't throwing, you know, the velocity that I was until I transferred to Ashland. So I really had no idea if I was going to be drafted or not. So I didn't really think about that, to be honest. I just kind of kept working hard and just kind of dreamed about it. And then it fell into place when I went down to Florida after I rehabbed for a year of Tommy John. I was pitching against Mike Trout's cousin, Aaron Cox, who pitched at Gannon University in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, and Gannon.
Yeah, so there was I think there's like right around 20 scouts there, and it just happened to be a Mariner scout, Devin. So Devin was there, and he saw me, and he told the area scout at the time, Jay Catalano, that he needed to follow me, you know, the rest of the year. But I had no idea that the Mariners were following me. I never heard anything from the Mariners. Like, I, you know, we got the typical questionnaires, and you know, there's a couple scouts that came and saw me and met with me at Ashland, but I never heard once from the Mariners up until a few days before the draft, and that's when Jay called me and introduced himself and told me he's been following me, and I was like, oh, really? Because I had no idea. Like, why did you think about saying something, you know, back in April, man? So that was kind of news, and so then it took off from there, and then he called me the night before the draft and said they have this amount of money and kind of how it all works, and next day they decided to take me. So that was kind of cool. And I remember getting a text from a Philly scout. I won't drop his name, but he told me, he texted me and said, that, quote unquote, damn Mariners, you are our next pick.
Oh, man. So, that must have felt good.
Yeah, so that was cool. It was an awesome experience. My mom, my friends, my family, they were around me. And so I remember my mom kind of, she was so excited that she wanted to take our picture. She fell over the chair, which is always a funny story in our living room because it was just kind of like, you know, the rush of emotions for everybody. It was really cool. My friends really enjoyed it. My best friend's a Mariners fan for some reason.
What?
We gave him a hard time. Yeah, I don't get it. You know, we're from Ohio. We're from, you know, we have the Cubs, the White Sox, the Reds, the Tigers, the Pirates all in our area.
Yeah.
And Indians. How are you a Mariners fan, man? So he loved Ichiro. Back in the day, and then obviously Ken Griffey. So it was really cool to have my friend Jensen here to see that. So awesome experience.
I mean, and you have the Browns too. I know that you were at a Browns game this year.
Come on, don't hate on my Browns now.
I am not. I am admiring the mental, the spiritual and emotional fortitude it must take to be a Browns fan. How?
It's tough. Some of them, like, DiCarlo would give me a hard time. Like, why are you a Browns fan, man?
He's an Eagles fan, right?
Yeah, he's enjoying their spurt right now.
I bet.
But, no, I think it's cool because hopefully at some point, it may be when I'm 50 years old, but the Browns will be good. And it'll just be like, I remember being a fan back when they were 0-16 and they're hosting parades for their losing season.
Did you have any friends that were at that? Or did you know anyone that was there?
I didn't know anybody that went there, but everyone knew about it, and everyone couldn't believe that they were actually putting it on. That was interesting. And so I think, like, you know, down the road, it'd just be cool to say, like, I was a devoted fan for X amount of years, and now even if they just make a playoff appearance, that'd be cool.
You're putting your time in now.
I'm putting my time in.
And then, you know, one day in the future when you have your cart for your rings and you're rolling down the street.
you can share some with
them. I can share some.
You can share some with Deshaun Kaiser.
Yeah. Well,
I was going to say, you mentioned you play, you know, during the downtime, there's a lot of video games and stuff. Do you play as the Browns in Madden?
Do you
take that challenge on? Oh, man.
I do.
That is dedication.
Wow.
That's dedication.
Yeah. So we actually just had, like, it's kind of fun for us when we come home. So I have two cousins in the military. Mm-hmm. One was in the Air Force and the other one's in the Marines. And so my cousin Wes, who was in the Air Force, just finished up. Mm-hmm. And so he's back home now. But my cousin Dez is still kind of bouncing back and forth. So but he gets to come home during Christmas. And then, you know, obviously with me being away from baseball, I get to come home during the holidays as well. So we like to have, like, tournaments, you know.
Absolutely.
And so we had a Madden tournament. And, you know, my brother's using the Steelers. My uncle's using the Saints. My cousin's using the Redskins, the Ravens. And then there's me with the Browns. And they're like, what are you doing, man? And so I go in and I run the table, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, Madden is one of my better games. Madden and 2K. So.
Oh. Absolutely.
So you have family members who are in the military. Did that, when you played in the military appreciation game, which I think was kind of, in a lot of ways, obviously we know who you are and we've been following you and been very excited about your progress.
Right.
But that really felt like a coming out party. On, I was watching with my dad and he was like, who? This guy's a Mariner? which is pretty exciting. So that was like a bit, that really felt like a coming out moment for you on a really big stage. Take us through that a little bit.
Well, first of all, you know, it was really cool to get to pitch in that, to have the opportunity to play in that game. You know, it was on TV. It was a military appreciation game. We're wearing the cool hats.
Right.
You know, so that was just cool. And then, and to, I guess to go with that, my cousin and his three military buddies, they just finished up their tour overseas, and they came down to Arizona, and they got to watch me pitch down in Glendale. So they got to watch me pitch a couple weeks before that. So it was really like, you know, a high moment in the fall, you know, because my, you know, they just got done serving. And now I'm like, man, you know, I'm very appreciative of it. I get to pitch in this military appreciation game. So it kind of, you know, it gave me goosebumps thinking about that when you look at that perspective. And so that was really, really awesome. And then also on top of it, getting to pitch in the game with my family members back home, watching on TV. I remember getting, like, my phone blew up. Was like, you know, it was like maybe 1 or 2 a.m. back home. And they were like, you know, I stayed at B-Dubs. One of my friends stayed at B-Dubs for 3 hours to wait for me to go in the game. And so, like, that stuff just humbles you, you know. It's like I have so many people back home supporting me, watching me. And for me to go out there and perform the way I did, I didn't expect to do that. But that was really awesome. And so, yeah, I guess you could say it was a coming out party because, you know, then the Mariners tweeted at me. So I kind of felt like I was cheesing ear to ear. So it was just really cool. It was an awesome experience. And that was a crazy game. If you guys remember, we were down yes. 4 runs and we came back and we tied it up. And then I believe it was Felia that gave us the go ahead
run naturally.
Yeah. So that was awesome. It was an unbelievable experience playing in that game. So
it was incredible because, like you said, you guys were down, and it's like, no, I'd really been hoping, because you weren't in the All-Star game, the Fall right. Stars game, which was something that sort of rankled at me a little bit. So I was like, this is Art's chance. He's going to get to go in. You know, we want to have him show up. And obviously Festa got to show up in the Fall Stars game and looked amazing.
Right.
So that was great. But, I really wanted you to have that moment. So when they came back, I was like, oh, my gosh, they're going to put Art in. They're going to put Art in. Very exciting. So you kind of blossomed into that role as the closer in Peoria. Obviously, there were, That was a crazy stacked team.
It was unbelievable.
Especially offensively. Yeah, tell us about, you have Michael Chavis and Acuna, obviously. Yeah. I mean, that was that was nuts. What was it like going to the, Urias, who is maybe my favorite non-Mariners prospect?
Yeah.
I mean, the names just keep coming. What was that like going to the field and playing with those guys every day?
It was cool. It was, because you take yourself outside of that situation for a minute, and you're like, man, like if you have that perception of I'm just a bystander right now and I'm watching these guys, you're sitting next to like you said, Ronald Acuna, Austin Riley, who's going to be like the Braves third baseman every day in the future, Michael Chavis, you know, Josh Naylor, Urias, Gurriel, and then the pitchers like T.J. Zoik, Max Fried, who went off.
Oh, yeah. he was nuts.
And then, you know, I'm sitting down there with all these bullpen arms who are just phenomenal too. And it's just like, man, you know, the list goes on and on. And then not to mention, you know, sitting there like with Felia, and you're like, I know Felia's good. You know, I know it. Everyone else does not know that. I know it. And then you go see him, and then he goes off in the Fall League, and you're like, this guy's a dude too. So it's just really, really cool to be able to suit up with these guys. And it's going to be fun. You know, I don't know how long I'm going to play in this game, but at some point I'm going to be sitting on my couch watching these games. And it's cool because my host dad kind of gave me this perception as well. He said, we were sitting there in Modesto, and he's like, yeah, I remember playing against this guy and that guy while we're watching MLB Network. And because he played with the Rockies organization. And I'm like, man, you know, that's someday that's going to happen with me. And so I kind of kept that in the back of my mind. And in the Fall League, I was like, you know, someday I'm going to be watching Ronald Acuna play when he's like 38 years old, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, it's just really, really cool to get that opportunity to play with these guys. And I know, like, me, Festa, and Gillies and DiCarlo, we would just talk about that all the time, especially like Festa and DiCarlo. When we would drive back to surprise our house, it'd just be like, wow, like, these guys are unbelievable. You know, it's cool. And you're like, well, I'm here with them, you know. So,
yeah.
But you never talk about yourself. You never have, you never do that. So it's just always cool to have the outside perception of, man, these guys are future, you know, could be Hall of Famers or future everyday All-Stars. It's just like absolutely blessing to play with those guys. And they're good dudes, too. They're great guys. That's the thing. Like, you guys know, you're baseball people. You hear sometimes guys show up, other people, or the personalities are a little different. These guys are all great dudes. Great dudes.
It seemed like the team just had an incredible chemistry. You know, I think you had a Snapchat. By the way, if you do not follow Art on social media, you should follow Art on social media. He's extremely entertaining. Do you want to give the people your Insta or your Snapchat?
Whatever? Yeah, that'd be cool. So my Twitter name is at my full name, at Arthur_Warren. There's no other numbers or involved. It's just pretty simple, at Arthur_Warren. And then my Instagram handle is, let's see, same thing as the Twitter, Arthur_Warren. And then I believe my Snapchat is Art Warren. Yeah, just Art Warren. No underscores in that one. So it's all pretty simple. There's no other numbers included into it.
Well, I really enjoyed getting to follow along, kind of like a little insider peek into the journey. But I mean, just seeing these videos from the locker room of, like, you know, guys, I have read tons of scouting reports on these sort of prospect luminaries just like walking around and hanging out, and you were all signing each other's shirts on the last day. I just thought that was a nice moment of team chemistry.
Yeah, we clicked like right away. And I kind of want to give credit to the Mariner guys, because we would talk crap to each other. You know, hitters are always, they always click. The hitters all know each other. So it's easy from that aspect of the locker room. But like me and Gillies and DiCarlo were kind of like the leaders of talking crap to each other. So we're all giving a hard time to each other, as we normally do all year. And these guys, they come in and they see that. And so that kind of like lightens up the mood a little bit, you know. It shows that, you know, and we told them, like, you know, at the end of the day, we all love each other. It's just how we roll. And so I think that kind of lightened up the mood. And then we started branching off, talking crap to the Red Sox guys and, you know, the Braves guys. And then eventually it kind of clicks. Like, there's like one guy, Josh Graham, he's with the Braves. And he's a big hunter, and so him and Gillies were always talking about hunting, and I would butt in, and I would tell him, like, so what, you guys like to go in the woods and watch Bambi walk around? You know? So it's just stuff like that. You know, it lightens the mood, and it kind of breaks the ice, and we kind of fell into that mold as a team, you know, that we've been playing together all season. So that's kind of something that we all noticed right away. I remember Michael Chavis kind of including that in one of his interviews as well. And so I think that's has a big reason that why we were able to go out and win almost every game and go out and win the championship together, because we molded fairly well right off the bat.
Yeah, it was really impressive, because here's this team of guys who don't know each other from Adam, and you kind of throw them all in the room. And like you were saying, when it's a lot of guys who have a ton of prospect hype, you know, you can have egos, you can have guys trying to show out and play for themselves, and it just seemed like that wasn't at all a factor.
Yeah, it wasn't. We all played together. We didn't have any case of that at all. And believe me, I looked for it. You know, I'm a smaller town guy. I'm not used to being in that stage. Mm. I looked for it, but I didn't find it anywhere. And I was just amazed. I can't think of any more positive things to say about these guys. They're all, I can't preach it enough. They were good dudes, and I loved it. It was an awesome opportunity to play with all of them.
I'm curious about something you mentioned, and maybe this is a little bit also of a transition on your baseball experience, but you know, you came in as a starter, right? And worked for a starter for a long time before transitioning to the bullpen. Yeah.
Right.
And so I know that, you know, as you mentioned, you know, when you're the way that the team breaks down, you know, hitters are always spending a lot of time together, position players are doing it, and you know, pitchers are often having their own separate group and sort of in their own separate world, but I think the bullpen is even its own group separated from that. So
it is.
has that been a strange transition for you, or has it been a sort of a good transition in that regard as well as on the field?
Well, I've been pretty flexible, like going back to college with it. I started in high school, went to the bullpen in college, went back to starting at Ashland. In between Ashland and Cincinnati, I played summer ball for the Lima Locos, and I was a bullpen guy there. That's when like, you know, it really started to hit me with the whole bullpen relationships. And because, you know, guys from all over, from Kennesaw State to Georgia, they all came down, they all came over here, and we kind of molded together. So I had that experience. And then when I went back to starting, you know, your starters together, you're sitting in the stands, you're charting, smaller group. I would say that kind of helped me with the transition. It was a little different, obviously, in pro ball. You're throwing a lot more than you were, you know, in the summer ball.
Yeah.
Experience that I had. And in college, you know, you play four times a week as opposed to in pro ball, you're playing six times. So that, I think that helped me with the transition. I obviously enjoyed being a starter because the routine that I was able to have, like at that time, Rich Dorman was my pitching coach, and he helped me out a lot with coming up with a really good quality pro starting routine. So I had, you know, my college routine was a little bit different, but Dor really showed me how to go about getting a good routine for the entire season as a starter. And then Ethan Katz helped me with that when I transitioned to the bullpen in Bakersfield. And I struggled a little bit, you know, just because I'm coming off of 20 starts or so, or maybe I think it was 15. Coming off of 15 straight starts, and then I go to the bullpen and I start throwing a little bit more, coming in different situations. I'm not really going through that routine that I developed. So we worked on that. And then this year, Woody really, really helped me out with really coming up with a solid bullpen routine. And that's something that I lacked right away at the beginning of the season. I didn't have this routine that would help me be so successful down in low A. And so we sat down and we discussed a routine out of the bullpen that I needed, some kind of template. And I think, you know, it started to, good outing started to calculate up after that and roll into the fall league. So
for sure. Do you mind going into a little bit of what that routine is? Because I know, you know, we hear, you know, we'll hear about, like, you know, in the past couple of years, you know, like Dan Altavilla and Edwin Diaz as like, oh, this was a guy, you know, you'll hear from DePoto or something like, oh, we saw something that we thought this guy's stuff is going to play up in the bullpen and, you know, has more, they have more success, come up to the big leagues, and, you know, it makes sense. Like, oh, now you're throwing harder.
Right.
You know, that part is obvious, but, you know, the stuff you talk about how you prepare, you know, normally when you're starting, you have, you know, 4 hours of time to come, relax, stretch out, you know, versus getting ready instantly. So how did you specifically adjust to that new routine?
Right. So, well, as a starter, I had, you know, I pitch, the next day I come in and I do lower body and condition heavy on that day, right around like 14 pulls, I think Paul was having me do. That's just kind of an idea. And you go and you throw to 90 feet. The second day, you come back, you throw your side, you do upper body. That was just my routine. And then the running workload kind of trickles down as the week goes down. So that was kind of like, you know, the most important 2 days that I had in my routine.
Sure.
And then as a bullpen guy, I didn't really have the whole routine of working out on a certain day. It was just kind of like workout as I go, and it just kind of felt sloppy to me for a while. And then also, I like the long toss too. So as a starter, I love long tossing on my side day. And so at coming out of the bullpen, I didn't know when to long toss. I didn't know if I was going to be up that day, if I was going to be up in a couple of days. You don't know. So I decided right around the All-Star break that I was going to come up with this routine of on one day. So if I were to pitch, let's say I pitch, you know, on a Friday night, Saturday I'm going to come in, I'm going to throw 90 feet, I'm going to work out my entire, like, I'm going to do a full body workout. That way I can, you know, get everything in. And then if I was up the next day, I'm ready to go. But it went from pitching to working out the next day and then throwing back to like 90 to 120 feet. And then the second day I long toss. I made sure I got my long toss in, even if I was going to be up that night. So right away I was throwing two innings, so I kind of knew I would have 2 days off. So it was a little bit easier to work with that. But towards the end of the year, when we started to get closer to the playoffs, it was you pitch one day, off day, and then you pitch in the next day. And so I still stuck to that routine. I think that helped me feel more prepared mentally heading into all those outings.
You were doing some really high leverage work too. Just seemed like in both Modesto and in the AFL, when the team was in a spot where they needed something locked down, you were the guy, you were the call. So did having that consistent routine kind of help you with the mindset? Because I can't imagine anything more terrifying, honestly, than going out with the game on the line and being told, like, okay, this is yours, deliver us safely. So did that, just having that routine kind of, how do you slow your heartbeat before you go out to do something like that?
I think it came with experience, that's for sure. It wasn't easy right away. I struggled with it in the beginning of the year. But also, I credit a lot of it to, like, working out. When I work out, I try to work out and also prepare, like, what I'm doing in the weight room is going to be more difficult than what I'm doing on the mound or what situation I'm going to be on the mound. So that mentally helps me be like, okay, you know, I've gone through something harder than this, than coming out and getting the last three outs, even though that's ridiculous.
but those are the kind of mental tricks you have to play on yourself, right?
It is, yeah. And I think that helped. That was kind of like my trick, you could say, that helped me mentally prepare, mentally be confident, go out there and be like, okay, you know. And then also, you have to have this mindset of my strength versus his strength. And so that's something that Woody told me in the middle of the year, because I was kind of struggling. Like, okay, I have a good fastball, but these guys are good fastball hitters. So that kind of helped me mentally shift away from that fear and go more aggression, you know, in the attack mode. And so I think those are little tricks or mental cues that help me kind of slow my heart down. It really has just come down to, like, you know, breathing and just having the mental confidence that, look, I'm gonna get us out of this situation. I'm gonna close it down. You know, whatever situation I'm in, I'm gonna succeed in it. So.
It also helps when you are throwing mid upper 90s with a with two other super nasty off speed pitches. I mean, that sequence closing out the was it the championship game that you closed out?
Which championship game?
the refrain of all Mariners fans dream of. Which championship game was it?
I was thinking of the AFL one, because obviously that was the one on TV,
right?
Where it was just you just hammered those guys. It's fantastic. It was just, you were just executing at will at the end of, I believe, yeah, that was the championship game, right?
Yep.
So I can imagine that, and it sort of seems like it, once you get through that first hitter, that it builds your confidence even a little, like, oh, I can beat these guys. I've got this.
It does. The first out is always the hardest. You guys know that. So when you get that out, you know, the statistics say that you're going to get out of the inning, you're going to put up a zero when you get the first hitter out. And so that's something that we kind of spoke about back in minicamp last year. Andy McKay drew up this whole thing on the whiteboard of percentages of first pitch strikes, 0-0 counts, 0-1 counts, getting the first hitter out, all that good stuff. And so, you know, when you actually kind of think about that and you focus in on getting the first guy out, it makes the inning a little bit easier. Not much. A little bit easier. Because these guys are good hitters.
Right.
But, you know, that helps. So, yeah.
And the point, I'm curious there, you mentioned Andy McKay. So a lot of what we have available to us is sort of reading between the lines on little details and little, you know, whispers and, oh, you know, the organization is focusing on this or, you know, whatnot. But
see the Z.
See the Z. Exactly. You know, but have there been specific things, you know, you mentioned that, you know, emphasizing first pitch strikes and the importance of getting that, you know, getting ahead and things like that. Have there been specific things that the Mariners organization or the coaches there have really emphasized as organizational philosophies that have been impactful for you or for the teams that you've been on in particular?
I think we really honed in on C to Z. We had throughout the organization, every month they'd post these percentages and it was ranks. And so it was whoever finished in the, you know, the top X percentage would be entered into a like a playoff bracket, you could say, and you'd have a rank. So we had, like, LJ Newsom was like number one. and then I came in at like number eight. And so and whoever won that gets an invite to big league camp. And so that kind of motivates you. And yeah, so like that, you know, that highlights that, and it kind of it brightens up that whole mentality of getting ahead, of working on the O pitches, working on getting to 0-1, being the 1-1 warrior where you get, you know, 1-1 count, you're getting to 1-2. Mm-hmm. So you really kind of you focus on that a little bit more because, you know, you go through and you're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that'd be nice. But do you really, like, focus on it? Do you really work on it? Do you really take the time, you know, every day to throw a flat ground and try to get your, you know, pitches around the strike zone a little bit more? Probably not. Well, this, I think, helped me because – and I'm competing too, you know. And then I really started to see the success that I had. When you look at the numbers, you're like, holy cow, man. You know, like, this is my – you know, whip my ERA when I'm 0-1 versus 1-0, and that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of helped me have a little more success in the second half, was really working on that. And then I found myself, like I said, in the playoff bracket. So that was really kind of cool. And I know, like, a lot of guys, a lot of our bullpen guys, we were all fired up. We're competing against each other. And so that was really cool. So I think that helped us. And then also on the hitter side, Jordan Cowan won ours. And so, it was Jordan Cowan versus, like, Braden Bishop for a while. And so, you know, a lot of the hitters, I remember guys coming in saying, hey, is that a PTPA? You know, so, like, if you think about it, that we were all about that C to Z. And I think that helped us a lot. You know, Felia was the greatest in the world at it. He helped out a lot of guys, and a lot of guys were motivated behind him on the hitters aspect. And then we had, like, you know, for a little bit, we had Pablo Lopez, who was just pounding the zone, throwing nothing but strikes, and so that kind of motivated, and Neidert too. So they kind of led the starters, and then we had Festa and, like, Spencer Hermann were more of our strike throwers in the bullpen, you know, and then those guys would come in and kind of lead the way for us. And so I really think that helped us, you know, have a lot of success both on the pitching aspect and the hitting aspect of seeing the Z.
It sounds like that's a positive competition too. Like, it's not one guy trying to elbow out somebody else, but it sounds like it was like a just motivated the whole locker room, and it almost sounds like it brought you guys together.
It did, because if you think about it, you know, as a hitter, the PTPA, they come in and they're like, oh, did I get the PTPA? Kind of selfish, but and if you look at it, he moved the runner over. So, like, let's say there's a runner on first, you know, and Joey Coletta's up and he hits a sack fly to right field, or I guess, let's say he's on second. Hits a sack fly to right field. Runner tags up to third. That's a PTPA. You know, he didn't get a hit, but he wants a PTPA, which is kind of selfish, you know, on his aspect. But it helps the team as well. So you're right. It is a positive competition between us, you know, because it kind of helps out both. You know, everyone's a little bit of selfish. You know, everyone has it in them, but at the same time, you know, your will for being selfish by trying to get to 0-0 or trying to get, you know, your PTPA, move a runner over, helps the team in the long run. So it brings it back to being all about the team.
I mean, it's right in the name, productive team play.
Right, 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 exactly.
So kind of thinking about we talked earlier about how connected that Javelinas squad was. That Modesto squad seemed pretty connected as well. What was that like, just being there for the full year? And you guys had a series of pretty incredible runs. And I know that there was some, you know, with Bishop getting promoted, with Neidert getting promoted, there was some in and out there. There were trades. But it really seemed like there was a core of guys who saw that season all the way through. You were one of them.
Right. I think a lot of it has to go with playing together last year. A lot of us played together. Actually, there's a group of us that moved up from rookie ball, like myself, Pablo, Neidert, and a couple other guys. We moved up from rookie ball together. And then there was a lot of Everett guys that played together. And so there was essentially two groups molding into one, into Clinton. And then that Clinton group went up into high A last year with the Modesto. So we've all played together essentially for the last three seasons. And so we kind of hope to keep that trend going into next year. But you become more than just teammates. You become brothers. And so I think that definitely helps. You know, you want to play a little bit harder for that guy next to you. Yeah, we did have some turnover in the middle of the year, and it affected us. But then, Mitch got us together down in Lake Elsinore, and he was real with us about it. You know, he said there are going to be trades. There's guys moving up. There's guys that are not going to move up. That's just the way it goes. And he said, that doesn't mean, you know, you guys got to quit. You guys don't have to continue trying to play like you're going to move up. You know, that's just how it went for us. And our team got picked apart. And we were all pretty upset about it because we were like, you know, you could say the dream team. We were rolling at that point right before Braden and Nick and Chris Mariscal got promoted. And then Lucas Giraldi and Pablo get traded. And so that just – it's another blow. And so we were kind of tore up for a minute there. But then we caught steam heading into August, and we all rolled through. And I think – you know, I'm going to keep bringing up Fully. I think a lot of it maybe had to do with Eric Fully. He was such a great leader, clubhouse guy. He was given the option to go up to AA or stay.
Really?
Yeah, he was given the option to go up to AA when Chris and Braden – got promoted, but he elected to stay with the team. I think maybe that has to do with his kids, but you know, that says a lot about Eric. He wants to be with us. He wants to be around his family. So him being a family guy rubbed off on us, and it brought us together again. And we were able to, like I said, catch steam and go into the playoffs and just absolutely cruise through the playoffs. I think all that is credit to Mitch. Mitch did an unbelievable job again the second year as my manager, of getting us to become a family right away from the start. It wasn't as difficult as it was last year because Mitch didn't know it last year in low A, but you know, he had pretty much the same group in Clinton and Modesto, and so we all know his philosophy, his mentality, his passion for kind of creating us as a family. And so I think all that is credit to Mitch and Woody and Jim Pankovitz.
Mitch, just to clarify, when you talk about Mitch, you're talking about Mitch Canham.
Yep. Yep, Mitch Canham.
Who is a Oregon State alum from the sort of greater Seattle area. So somebody who a lot of Mariners fans are pretty familiar with just because he's a local guy, but seemed to be tremendously popular as a coach. I've seen a lot of your teammates giving him accolades as a huge part of your success.
Yeah, Mitch is he's awesome to play for. He goes about his business in a very professional way, and I think what we enjoy is he treats us like men. You know, we're not in college anymore, and so you know, he doesn't treat us like we're college players where he's got to kind of baby us, make sure we're doing this and that. He treats us like men, and he goes through it with us too. It's not just like, hey, guys, go out there and take PFPs while I'm going to sit in my, you know, office and work on the lineup for, you know, the next couple hours. He's out there doing it with us. He's shagging with us with the pitchers. He's talking to us. He has relationships with every single player. Even though I wasn't a big fan of it, but we had our player development meetings, and he was always making sure that we were on the same page. So, like, you know, he puts in the work and the small detailed things, and his family was always around. His kids were in the locker room, so he just has a really good vibe about him. Like, you know, the whole family aspect. That's what he preaches. That's what he wants to, I guess, coin his legacy on when he's done coaching, is how he was able to bring teams to become a family and play together and not become boys but become men and good men outside of the baseball field. So Mitch was always on top of us about community service. So I think he's just a great leader. You know, for us right now, it's someone nice to have in the Mariners organization. I think we're pretty lucky to have him in there. So you can see why, you know, everyone has nothing but good things to say about Mitch.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And also why Modesto won, you know, they won not just on the field, but off the field as well. They got recognized for community service. Modesto gave them a community service award, organization of the year or something like that. So
like the city of Modesto.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
And the Cal League also recognized them. So
I did have a question because you mentioned it a little bit, and I don't want to push too hard on it, but you know, having so many people in the organization be, you know, traded or be moved around, you know, you mentioned that was tough for a while and you guys were able to band together about that, but you know, does that have an impact on how you know, go about your day-to-day, or how you as an individual or you guys as teammates you know, interact? Because you know, I from the major league perspective, it's easy to see sort of like, okay, well, these are prospects, or this is, you know, this type of prospect. And you know, it's easy to differentiate, you know, to separate that as just like, well, somewhat, you know, you can view it in like, these are a bunch of interchangeable pieces. But each of these are different individual teams made up of individuals. And as a group, I feel like when you're having people taken out and switched out, that has to be impactful on your mm-hmm. on your morale at a certain point. So how do you guys manage that experience? I guess being in the Jerry DePoto system.
Right.
no, I mean, I understand that. I think a lot has to go to just keeping the same mantra of being a team. If you start thinking about that too much, you know, you start to play for yourself. You start to wonder, like, am I going to be traded? Who's going to be traded next? And that gets away, that gets in the way of what you're really trying to accomplish. You're trying to go out there and just win games. I mean, that's what it's all about. You can't, we like to have this term in the Mariners organization of control what you can control. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about it, I mean, you can't control, you know, who's going to get traded or not. It may be for the better, you know, the big league team. And that's what they tell us, too, and it makes sense. You know, you want to win at the big league level. You know, that's what it's all about. And so we understand that sometimes, you know, players need to go. But it crushed us, you know, because, like I said, we're a family. We've played together for the last couple of years. So, you know, we're more than just teammates now. Like, these guys are my friends. And so, you know, when I see, like, Schiraldi go, you know, it kind of crushes you. And I know, like, it made a huge impact on, like, on Spencer Hermann, because Spencer and Lucas played together for the last 4 years, you know, practically every level together. And so when you see, you know, a guy like that get traded, that'd be like, you know, next year Darren and I get traded from, you know, one another. We played together for the last four seasons. Mm-hmm. So it takes an impact on you, that's for sure, because you're like, yeah, man, you know, like, this is, you know, you look past the whole baseball aspect. You're like, this is my friend, man. You know, like, I love this guy. And so it does kind of make an impact on the team. Like I said, it tore us up for a minute there. But it goes back to, you know, I got to credit Michigan. He brought us together. And then, you know, we all welcomed, like, Brian Bunnell with open arms. Mm-hmm. He just came in from the Rays. So when Bonnie came in, you know, it took a minute. He was a little quiet, obviously. But we were really good about, you know, welcoming in with warm arms, giving him a hard time, breaking the ice with him. And then, you know, within a week, you're like, holy cow, this guy, I feel like I've been playing with him the last couple of years. So I think a lot has to go with, like, the group of guys that we had on the team as well. A lot of good dudes. So you're right. It does take an impact on the team when guys get traded. But it's out of your control, and you kind of just got to play through it. And it's part of the game, too, you know, so.
So we've talked about the success you've had. We've talked about sort of the pathway that you've followed so far. What are you excited about for this next year? I guess what are your goals, you know, having finally finished, you know, for us as fans, it feels like there hasn't been baseball for ages. Right. But I feel like you must have been in the sense of like, oh, I have a month where I'm not, you know, I'm not getting called on every other day to pitch.
Right.
But now that you're maybe transitioning into looking forward, you know, what are your goals and what are you looking forward to for this year?
My goals are to have a really good spring training, leave a good impact on the Major League coaching staff. Show them that I can go out there and I can compete at that level.
Where you will be in big league spring training.
Right.
We are correct,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I don't know if you've heard yet, but you're going to big league spring training.
Kate was so mad when you went.
I had to. It was an opportunity for me to do it. I had to. Mad. I wish I could have seen your face. She was like,
I'll send you a snap. Yeah. It was picture Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, like the
with both hands on the
yeah, that was me. So you're headed off to big league camp. What are you going to be working on?
I'll probably just get back into the swing of things. Honestly, just having rhythm in my my mechanics, just feeling good, getting back to finishing pitches, stuff that I ended the fall league on. Keep working on my slider that I developed last year. And then just kind of, you know, just pound the zone right away. I think that's the biggest thing when you get back the throwing. It's just being around the zone. It's not about how fast you can throw, unless you're Tiago Vieira, who just naturally throws 1,000 miles an hour. But for me, right away, I guess my first step will be, you know, work on pounding the zone, and then the velocity will come back, you know, as I start to build up the arm strength. Also, another goal would be to I don't want to assume, you know, so I want to break camp with Little Rock, Arkansas, the Double A team, and then have a good, you know, couple months there. And obviously, my goal every year is to try to move up halfway through the year. But when you break it down, I just kind of want to put together first half, and then whatever happens, happens from there. I don't want to try to look too much into that, because then I start getting over my head and all that. So I want to keep it simple. But, yeah, those are my first couple goals now. And then, obviously, another goal is always to stay healthy throughout the year.
Sure.
And I guess the biggest goal would be to make my debut at some point this year. I think that would be a pretty amazing experience.
And, seems like a fair bet.
Right. And so you just never know. You know, this being my 40-man year, if they're going to protect me, if they're not going to protect me, you know, that's over my head. I don't know. But, you know, I hope I get an opportunity heading into next year at some point this year to get to the big leagues. And
yeah, I'm not too worried about the guy who throws upper 90s with three solid pitches, who can work in a multi-inning role, not getting protected on the 40-man. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm no expert. But say I think – well, that's got to be exciting too. First of all, I know you're probably excited to get out of the Cal League, because that is punishing.
Yes, it
for
is.
For pitchers, especially.
I'm very excited.
Arkansas will be a nice change. But, yeah, that's – I mean, I know starters love starting, but sort of with where the game is headed, right, with the growth of relief pitchers, and I don't know if you have been paying attention to the off season. There has not been a lot to pay attention to, but them relievers getting paid.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I noticed that. Like Wade Davis signing a $52 million contract for 3 years. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah. So it's not, it's maybe not quite so, it's a little more attractive to be a reliever in today's game, I feel like. And it maybe hastens your jump. You know, you have to have looked at guys like Diaz and Altavilla making the jump straight out of Double A. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think those two guys kind of stick out to me. And also like Vieira and Pagan, who. They went up AAA for a little bit, and then they made their debuts from AAA. But those kind of four guys, I feel like I'm very similar to those four guys, and so I kind of hope that I'm on the same path. If it's the route of Pagan and Vieira, where I'm in AA for a little bit and then go up AAA, and then quickly make my debut after that, or just make the straight jump like Altavilla and Diaz, I think that'd be. Be super ideal for me. Now I don't know if that's in their plans, but we'll have to see. But yeah, I think that'd be cool, and it gives me hope. You know, it gives me hope. It gives my teammates hope. So I think we all kind of pay attention to that. Not just myself, but everyone in the organization sees those four guys as like, hey, you know, I could possibly follow in suit of those guys.
I'm sorry. John asked what you were excited about, and I completely made you talk about baseball and hard stuff. But let's have a fun question for.
Well, I was curious, since I imagine, you know, having, you know, when you're going down to Arizona, and you know, there's only so much baseball you can fit into the day. So, you know, you mentioned you ran the table on your own family. who are you excited about, or who do you think is the stiffest competition that you're going to face when you're down in spring training, Madden or 2K?
Right. So spring training is always fun because we get like Andrew Moore will come down and play with us. Kyle Wilcox will come down and play with us. And it's always – Wilcox would be my toughest battle in 2K.
Okay. Who's your team? Are you your Cavs or?
Yeah, I definitely got to go with the Cavs, which is kind of like cheating. You know, it's like using the Cavs versus the Warriors.
Well, but like
I feel like if you take the Browns in Madden, you are entitled to take the Cavs.
Yeah.
But we haven't really played Madden as much, mm-hmm. But I know DiCarlo's been hounding me. He wants an opportunity to play against me.
He wants to play as the Eagles.
He wants to use the Eagles. So sure, I'm going to have to.
Sure.
You just got to tell him that's fine, but, you know, you got to play with the live rosters, right? You know,
exactly.
Nick Foles, baby, Nick Foles.
I'm going to have to remind him that I run the table in Madden.
And how's your pool game? Is it, because I know that's always been a big thing at Mariners spring training. Have you spent any time in the big league? Were you called up at all last year?
No, I've never pitched in the big league spring training games.
Oh, so you're going to be on TV sometimes, and you're going to be in a clubhouse with, like, Robbie Cano and Nelson Cruz. Like,
with Robinson Cano and his 7 phones that he's like simultaneously maintaining conversations.
Yeah, I think that'll be cool. I got to kind of, you know, play it off like I'm not starstruck, but, you know, obviously I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Something Ian Miller told us that was pretty cool was when he was in big league spring training last year, guys like Jerod Dyson made time for him and gave him some base stealing tips. So whose ear would you really like to bend in spring training?
I've kind of already cheated. I guess I've been doing that a little bit already. No, it's funny you say Jerod Dyson because Jerod actually spoke with me a little bit. I was talking to Tony Zick in the hot tub and the cold tub last year about just pitching inside and just pitching in general, just, you know, hearing from a big leaguer. Mm-hmm. And Jerod comes in and he's like, oh, well, here, talk to Jerod about it. You know, Jerod, how do you feel about when a guy establishes the inside part of the plate? And so he broke that down for me. And then King Felix walks in and Zick's like, hey, or Jerod is like, hey, tell this guy about pitching inside. And Felix was short and sweet. He goes, throw inside. It's my plate. Don't give hitters any credit. So, I was like, Felix, it's easy for you to say that, man. I'm not as talented as you are. No, but I look forward to picking James Paxton's ear a little bit more. I've talked to Paxton. He's been really open with me the last couple of spring trainings. I don't know why. I don't think he knows who I am. Because he's like this guy.
It's that Canadian knife.
Yeah. No, but Paxton, yeah, he's always got, you know, a lot of knowledge to tell me. And he just, I mean, the stuff that he tells me about pitching, it just blows my mind. Like, I never thought of it in that perspective. So I look forward to talking to Paxton a little bit more. Obviously, Felix. And then some of the bullpen guys, you know, I want to talk to the new guy that we just signed, Juan Nicasio.
Juan Nicasio.
Nicasio. And then also, like, Altavilla and Diaz. And I want to learn from, like, those guys because those guys are right around my age. Especially, like, I feel like I can relate a lot to Dan. So I really want to pick his brain while I can.
Yeah, coming out of a D2.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like we're very similar. Now, his stuff's probably a little bit better than mine. But it's, you know, it's the same mindset, kind of like, you know, power guys, aggressive. So I kind of want to pick his brain and hear what he has to say. So I'm looking forward to that. I had that mindset going into the fall league. It was like I'm coming in with open ears. I want to learn, you know. So
yeah,
I kind of want to take that into spring training as well.
Between Altavilla and Nicasio, I think you can get very good tips on taking bicep-enhancing Instagram photos. That much I know.
Yeah.
I don't, like, that was the first, like, when that signing came through, we were like, okay, like, we don't really know that much about this dude. Like, yeah, like, he's good. Look him up. We look him on it. The first, like, photo we found on him on Instagram was just him mean mugging him in the gym, like, an extra medium tank top, like.
Oily. He was also
oily.
He was well oiled. He was glistening like a Christmas ham.
Yeah. And like he's got a tattoo of Jesus on his right bicep that I've never seen Jesus bigger. Just like it's extra large. It is fantastic. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess we'll know how much time you've spent with Nicasio and Altavilla by like the size of your quads and your biceps.
Yes, I do need to take some lower body tests from Dan. I remember watching him squat like last year and he was just repping out like 515 or something like that. Like it was nothing. And I'm like, and everyone around them is just like, this guy's an animal. He's a freak. You know? But so, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting some lifting tips from those two guys.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, Art, you are such a pleasure. What a joy. And we are so happy to have you as part of the Mariners organization and so excited for all of your success and everything that's coming forward for you next year. It's cool to see you start to get some recognition. I am a big fan of the Fine Art nickname that MLB Pipeline gave
you. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah? Are you down with Fine Art? Because you know if you make the show, when you make the show, there's going to be nicknames aplenty. And Art is not a common name. I can't think of a lot of other guys I know around your age who are named Art.
Yeah, it's really not. But I do like the Fine Art. That's
fine
cool.
Fine Art was, yeah. was really...
I was into art back in high school, and then I got away from it, and I just let Joe Pistorisi do all the artwork now.
Oh, yeah, he is stupid talented.
Yeah.
Stuff. But yeah, Fine Art is pretty... I was mad I hadn't come up with that first. Your teammates do seem to love saying your name, I will notice.
Yeah, they call me...
Save It Art.
Yeah, Save It Art. I hear that... probably more than 2 million times a year. I already know I'm going to hear it when I get to Arizona, the first person that sees me. It's not like, hey, what's up, bro? How you been? It's always like, Save It, Art. It's like I didn't even say a word, and I'm getting told to save it.
Is that just because you talk a lot, or what?
Yeah, I'm always talking. I'm always giving guys a hard time, so I guess I deserve it.
All right. Well, I think we'll roll forward with Fine Art. I see a lot of Photoshops in your future with picture frames and whatnot. So.
Nice.
Wait until Mariners Nation gets a hold of it.
Yeah.
We love our goofy Photoshops.
Nice.
All right. Well, thank you again so much. Give us one more plug for following you on social media, because anyone who's listened to this obviously knows what a delight you are. It is equally so on social media. Where can the people find you?
So on Twitter, it's Arthur_Warren. It's the same handle on Instagram. And then on Snapchat, it's just Art Warren altogether. No underscores in that one. So that's my Twitter handle and Instagram handle, Arthur_Warren. Thank you, John and Kate. I appreciate you guys having me on. That was fun.
Of course.
That's cool. Yeah, thank you so much. All right, so that is it for this week, and we will talk to you next week.
All righty.
Keep a gold chain on my neck, fly as a jet. Boy, better treat me with respect. Keep a gold chain on my neck, fly as a jet. Boy, better treat me with respect. Keep a gold chain on my neck. As a jet, boy, better treat me with respect. Keep a gold chain on my neck. Fly as a jet, boy, better treat me with respect.
Rock the boat like a one-eyed pirate. Rick James, I can get it on my eyelids. 2 a.m. minute, 5 on the highway. Whole world get a little misguided. With the spotlight, put me in the spotlight. Trust no one, they put you in the